Good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Sunday service. We also affectionately call ourselves WOOF. And I wish you a happy May Day, a tradition originating in England celebrating new life and fertility, and not a plane plummeting into the ocean. My name is Brad Hewitt. I use the pronouns he and him, and it is my joy to serve as your lay leader this morning, whomever and wherever you happen to be. We want you to know that you are welcome here in this space, in this moment, no matter your age or abilities, the color of your skin, your native language, or where you were born. Whomever you love or the pronouns you use, whatever spiritual practices you follow, or if you follow none, whether your heart is overflowing with gratitude and joy, or broken open with grief and pain, we are so grateful to be with you this morning. All of us together in this community of conscience and compassion. I encourage you to check the announcements in your order of service here in the sanctuary, which we don't have yet, or attached to the email with the link to the service to see what else is happening here at WOOF. I'm also excited to announce that today is our first live coffee hour downstairs after the service since the pandemic began. Love that. We're moving in the right direction. However, our Zoom room will also be open for our virtual coffee hour at 11:30, so we're still living in two worlds. If this is your first time with us and you'd like to know more about who we are and are here in the sanctuary, again, please join us afterward for coffee, tea, and conversation. Or if you're online, I invite you to get in touch with our congregational administrator through our website, woof.net. Today's chalice reading is by Jamie A. Yandel. We light this flame to ignite the sacred power of justice. We light this flame so that it may be a beacon of hope in moments of uncertainty, fear, anxiety, and the unknown. We light this flame and are emboldened by its blaze, knowing our strength as a powerful people is rooted in the diverse ways we answer the call of love. Please join me in our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. We have an opening hymn, number 305 in the hymnal, De Colores. All
nos lucir, y por eso los grandes amores de muchos colores me gustan a mí.
Good morning. Our opening words are by Barbara Wells. O spinner, weaver of our lives, your loom is love. May we who are gathered here be empowered by that love to weave new patterns of truth and justice into a web of life that is strong, beautiful, and everlasting.
Click, clack, moo. Cows, the type. Farmer Brown has a problem. His cows like to type. All day long he hears click, clack, moo. Click, clack, moo. Clickety clack. First, he couldn't believe his ears. Cows that type, impossible. Click, clack, moo. Click, clack, moo. Clickety clack, moo. Then, he couldn't believe his eyes. Dear Farmer Brown, the barn is very cold at night. We'd like some electric blankets. Sincerely, the cows. It was bad enough the cows had found the old typewriter in the barn. Now they wanted electric blankets. No way, said Farmer Brown. No electric blankets. So, the cows went on strike. They left a note on the barn door.
Sorry, we're closed. No milk today.
No milk today, cried Farmer Brown. In the background, he heard the cows busy at work. Click, clack, moo. Click, clack, moo. Clickety clack, moo. The next day, he got another note.
Dear Farmer Brown, the hens are cold too. They'd like electric blankets. Sincerely, the cows.
The cows were growing impatient with the farmer. They left a new note on the barn door.
Closed. No milk. No eggs.
No eggs, cried Farmer Brown. In the background, he heard them. Click, clack, moo. Click, clack, moo. Clickety clack, moo. Cows that type, hens on strike. Who ever heard of such a thing? How can I run a farm with no milk and no eggs? Farmer Brown was furious. Farmer Brown got out his own typewriter. Dear cows and hens, there will be no electric blankets. You are cows and hens. I demand milk and eggs. Sincerely, Farmer Brown. Duck was a neutral party, so he brought the ultimatum to the cows. The cows held an emergency meeting. All the animals gathered around the barn to snoop, but none of them could understand moo. All night long, Farmer Brown waited for an answer. Duck knocked on the door early the next morning. He handed Farmer Brown a note.
Dear Farmer Brown, we will exchange our typewriter for electric blankets. Leave them outside the barn door, and we will send Duck over with the typewriter. Sincerely, the cows.
Farmer Brown decided this was a good deal. He left the blankets next to the barn door and waited for Duck to come with the typewriter. The next morning, he got a note.
Dear Farmer Brown, the pond is quite boring. We'd like a diving board. Sincerely, the ducks. Click-clack, quack. Click-clack, quack. Clickety-clack, quack.
Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week for a brand new story.
So she prepares to give us our morning reading. I did want to give a brief introduction to Reverend Connie Yost, who is WOOKS affiliated community minister, and apologize I don't have more info, but I'm so glad she's here today. And Connie, can you please join us?
So our reading today is from Martin Luther King Jr. And this is when he was speaking to the sanitation workers in Memphis on March 18th, 1968. Okay. If you will judge anything here in this struggle, you're commanding that the city will respect the dignity of labor. So often we overlook the worth and significance of those who are not in professional jobs, or those who are not in the so-called big jobs. But let me say to you tonight that whenever you are engaged in work that serves humanity and is for the building of humanity, it has dignity and it has worth. One day our society must come to see this. One day our society will come to respect the sanitation worker if it is to survive. For the person who picks up our garbage in the final analysis is as significant as the physician. All labor has worth. You are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. I need not remind you that this is the plight of our people all over America. The vast majority of Negroes in our country are still perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. My friends, we are living as a people in a literal depression. Now, you know, when there is vast unemployment and underemployment in the black community, they call it a social problem. When there is vast unemployment and underemployment in the white community, they call it a depression. But we find ourselves living in a literal depression all over this country as a people. Now, the problem isn't only unemployment. Do you know that most poor people in our country are working every day? They are making wages so low they cannot begin to function in the mainstream of the economic life of our nation. These are facts which must be seen. And it is criminal to have people working on a full-time basis and a full-time job getting part-time income. And in Martin Luther King's speech to the United Automobile Workers, he reminds us that what we need is a revolution of values. He says, We built a cotton economy for 300 years as slaves on which the nation grew powerful. We, too, realize that when human values are subordinated to blind economic forces, human beings can become human scrap.
There is power in a factory, power in the land, power in the hands of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union. Now the lessons of the past were all learned with workers' blood. The mistakes of the bosses we must pay for. From the cities to the farmlands and the trenches full of mud. War has always been the bosses' way, sir. The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black flag, all workers unite. For our brothers and our sisters from every far-off land, there is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that they will realize brutality and just laws cannot defeat us. But who'll defend the workers who cannot organize when the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us? Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort for the widow, a light to the child. There is power in a union. And our sisters, together we will stand. There is power in a union.
And I wanted to, again, just introduce Connie Yost, our affiliated community minister with WOOF, and also with her today is Timothy Welp with the Oregon Nurses
Association.
Thank you. I appreciate you both being here today.
Thanks for that. Music was wonderful. And Timothy will be sharing a few words here in the middle of my sermon. I'm going to start. I am the Reverend Connie Yost, one of your affiliated community ministers, and I'm very happy to be here after quite a while. So I welcome everybody, and it's good to see you today. So Martin Luther King Jr. reminds us that all labor has worth. On this May 1, we celebrate International Workers' Day, or May Day, as it's been called in the labor movement. So let's call to mind today all workers. The workers who have good jobs, which pay a living wage with benefits, and those many, too many, who toil invisibly and visibly for much less than what they need to sustain themselves and their families. In the last years of his life, Martin Luther King Jr. was increasingly outspoken in his dissatisfaction with capitalism and the ways in which racism and violence had been interwoven into the structural workings of the economy and polity of the United States. Today, we see this in the glaring inequality of wealth and racial overrepresentation in certain job sectors, like farm workers, or in income brackets or geographical regions of the world. King was murdered in 1968 in Memphis shortly after he made that speech, where he was participating in the sanitation workers' strike, workers who were deemed unworthy of respect and dignity, working in a lowly job. King's focus on economic justice came from his long struggle during the civil rights movement, years where economic boycotts turned out to be a successful strategy. But it also came from his solidarity with the poor, like the sanitation workers and others he was working with in the newly formed Poor People's Campaign. He knew that too many workers were considered human scrap, disposable living labor. He knew these workers knew what they suffered, and from there knew that exploitation and capitalism went together. In his 1967 speech at the Riverside Church, King said that what we need is a radical revolution of values. We must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society, he said. For when machines and computers, profit motives and property rights are considered more important than people, the giant triplets of racism, extreme materialism, and militarism are incapable of being conquered. Today, we as a people of faith are uniquely qualified to participate in that radical revolution of values. Unfortunately, not that much has changed since 1968. King reminds us that we must focus on the entirety of the person, of the worker, not just their material needs, though those are important, but on their spiritual needs, on the recognition of their inherent worth and dignity as a human being, no matter their job or identity. Labor unions have been a critical way that families were able to enter the middle class. But union membership had its peak in 1954, and decline in union membership mirrors the decline in the middle class's share of national income. When union membership was at its peak, income inequality was also at its lowest point in history. Now, the Economic Policy Institute reports that CEOs were paid 351 times as much as a typical worker in 2020. And some people say it's even higher than that. But compare this to 21 to 1 in 1965 and 61 to 1 in 1989. And the gap today is even more striking in some companies where CEOs with the highest pay run companies where the average worker's wage are the lowest. For instance, I found out Dollar General's CEO has the third highest pay at $58.5 million per year, while 92% of the Dollar General workers make less than $15 an hour. Clearly, a radical revolution of values in company compensation is desperately needed. What is right and fair for the workers should be the first priority. And today, you probably noticed in the news, we are experiencing a surge of labor activity. With just 10% of the U.S. workforce belonging to a union nowadays, down from the peak of 35% in 1954, there were 370 labor strikes and 700 labor protests in the United States last year. So it seems that we are in a new age of union organizing, or at least labor organizing for better wages and working conditions. And a recent Gallup survey found that nearly 70% of Americans approve of labor unions, and for people under 35 years of age, that approval rating is 77%. So this is good and encouraging because, as Timothy will explain to us, labor organizing is an extraordinarily difficult, risky, and lengthy task which needs the support of good community members like ourselves. In the national news recently, unions have racked up wins at Amazon, Starbucks, Verizon, REI, the New York Times, MIT, and other places. John Logan, a professor who has studied union avoidance efforts for two decades, says that workers and their attitudes have changed. Workers, especially the younger workers, are braver now about speaking out. They're using social media to outmaneuver the company-hired consultants, and they're embracing highly effective strategies like worker-to-worker organizing and interrupting the so-called captive audience meetings where company-hired consultants discuss the supposed evils of unions to the employees. But still, union busting is something that companies do and workers have to overcome. Here in Oregon, the Eugene Starbucks recently voted to unionize, and the Portland area Starbucks employees are currently holding rallies and car caravans around town, gathering community support for their eventual union vote. Also in the Portland metro area, the Nabisco union workers went on strike last year and settled for better wage and working conditions. Over the many years, Timothy will talk about this, Burgerville workers finally won their first union contract after organizing for years, and they're the first fast food workers in the country to be unionized. So here today with us, thank you very much, is Timothy Welp. He's an organizer with the Oregon Nurses Association, and he'll tell us some more about the organizing that is going on here in Portland right now. Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Timothy Welp. I want to appreciate the invitation to just briefly touch on the challenges that workers are dealing with. My pronouns are he, him, and his. And I would just say this is just so inspiring, the conversation that you're having this morning, because I think that book, Click, Clack, Moo, that book lays out the labor movement. If you know what you're looking at, all the pieces are there. Those chickens were standing in solidarity with their cows. To tell a little bit about myself, just ever so short, I'm a social worker by trade, and I've worked in children's mental health programs for almost 20 years. And when I saw the programs had lost their way on the mission, I learned that I could pick a fight with the employer over ethical issues and not get fired. That changed my life. And I think that's what we're talking about, workers finding a way to stand up for the things that they value as a group. I think there's so much we could talk about, but just to quickly walk through some things. Currently, as Reverend Connie said, there are a ton of labor struggles going on. Workers daring to figure out how to change the status quo at their work site. Starbucks is an example. I've lost count how many stores across the country have chosen to organize. It's over 200 at this point. I really don't know the number. But locally, as Reverend Connie said, Burgerville, they won their election. I think my task briefly is to touch on that's really just the beginning of the fight. To summarize in short what workers go through, there's a few elements that usually have to be present for a workforce to be successful. One is they have to care about each other. You know, and so if workers have a sense of responsibility or community with each other, that's kind of the soil, the fertile soil in which an organizing campaign can start. And when workers, you know, they typically form a committee that is a tight group that doesn't share broadly, because as soon as word gets out that a group of employees is organizing, what was the phrase that you used? It's just the professional phrase, union avoidance. That's the polite term for union busters. And let me tell you, everybody uses them top to bottom. I want to talk shortly about the Providence St. Joseph's Health System, which I currently work with the nurses who work within Providence. All the companies use union busters, and there is a variety of tactics because the consequences for breaking labor law are quite minimal or irrelevant. It takes years to process those violations. And what happens in the meantime, that group of folks who care for each other, the strategy is to break them apart, to scare folks, to demonstrate power, and for folks to move on, because turnover is a killer. Imagine if you're at Amazon and turnover is at 75% or higher, you have to re-educate everybody every month. It's an incredible amount of work. But back to the quick arc of getting a union, you have to have a community of workers who care about each other. You learn typically by a community organizer how to facilitate a campaign. You file for an election, you win that election, and then the real work starts, because the real work is fighting with a well-paid union-busting attorney fighting for a contract. And Burgerville's their fight from start to finish was over 4 years. And so think about the endurance and the focus and the commitment to each other. So what I tell the people I work with, unions are about, it's a vehicle that we care for each other. I believe unions allow us to maintain dignity. They allow us to challenge abuse of power. And now since there's so many things we could talk about, I want to just talk a little bit about what's going on at Providence Hospitals. And there's two other programs, an advice line and home health program. But Providence throughout Oregon, as you might know, Providence is actually a monster conglomerate. It's a very, very well-funded organization spanning across the West Coast. So there is a fight. OFNHP, who are nurses at Kaiser, they went through this fight about a year ago. There is a fight on, because as you know, our healthcare system has been brutally damaged. There is a push to lower professional care standards and hold down costs, because the giant healthcare corporations, I'll call them, because that's what they are, they're fighting for market share. They're gobbling up community hospitals. They're gobbling up clinics. And that's where their focus is right now. So enter the Providence nurses, who there are seven bargaining units in the largely in the Portland area that are fighting back because things have been so extreme. They've survived over 2 years of brutal conditions where they've been wildly understaffed. And if the public knew some of the things that were going on, we'd all be pretty freaked out. I'm trying to be efficient here. So in essence, we've come together and we've tried to form a coalition of bargaining units. There's 10 Providence bargaining units in Oregon, and we've started supporting each other in solidarity, and we're pushing back against the abuse, against the violations of Oregon Health Authority standards on patient care. There's all kinds of challenges, but in the news right now, the Providence St. Vincent nurses have they've gone through 17 bargaining sessions, sneaking up on 7 months of challenging the employer to come up with a fair contract. Willamette Falls, which is where I work, I actually work at Willamette Falls Providence Hood River, Providence Newburgh, Providence Seaside. So I'm immersed in Providence challenges right now. We've been bargaining for about 7 months, and Providence is not moving on core issues. We're talking about safe staffing language. We're talking about making sure nurses get breaks or meals when they work 12-hour shifts. We're talking about nurses fighting back against having patient loads of 8, 9, 10 people. Those things are unacceptable if you believe in high medical, high patient care standards. So we're headed to what hopefully is a fair contract. We have stood our ground. The nurses have been brave. They went through two or more years. They've been amazingly resilient. But we're at the place where we're looking for community support, because if Providence sees that their brand is being questioned, that is extremely effective. We would like to believe a corporation cares about all the values that they preach. We don't experience that. So at this point, we're pivoting to a much more public position. Providence St. Vincent's, they have a strike vote, a strike authorization vote, which means it will pass. I will just tell you, I know way too much. It will pass, and that's going to close on May 3rd, and that will empower the bargaining team to call for a strike if we can't get management to meet us in the middle. We'll see if that happens. In Willamette Falls, we have an informational picket happening on May 11th in downtown Oregon City. We're going to be marching from the Providence Willamette Falls Community Center to the courthouse and back. We're going to talk a little bit about the struggles, because we're having the same experience. And we're inviting community to come ask questions and show up, because ultimately we're fighting to maintain professional patient care standards. The fight has lots of pieces to it. Some of them are economic, because we need to hold on to nurses who understand what the standards should be, as opposed to the new grads who are undertrained and underexperienced, and they're not bad people. They just don't have the institutional memory to do the patient care that we believe patients deserve. So I apologize for jumping around a little bit, trying to keep my chat quick, but I will hang out afterwards. I also want to make a quick pitch. When I helped form a union at my mental health agency, I learned about labor in other community groups by being part of an organization called Jobs with Justice. I have pledge cards. If you want to find out about this stuff in much more detail at your own pace, I would encourage you to sign up to be a pledger, which means you commit to 5 times a year showing up for somebody else's struggle. Because individually, we lose when we fight the boss, but when we show up together, we can push back. So thanks for putting up with my quick chat. Really appreciate you all inviting this conversation, and thank you.
Well, thank you, Timothy. And we'll have that information on flyers or downstairs for the coffee hour, too. So in my part, I am part of the Faith Labor Committee with Jobs with Justice, too, so I didn't think of the pledge card, but I appreciate your bringing those, so that's great. One of the hats I wear is in my ministry with farm workers. I'm president of Farm Worker Ministry Northwest, and serve on the board of the National Farm Worker Ministry. And like Jobs with Justice here in the Portland area, we at Farm Worker Ministry, we respond to the farm workers' requests for advocacy and support. These are farm workers that can be in Washington or Oregon, sometimes Idaho. So farm workers are definitely some of the people that Martin Luther King described as human scrap, the way that their working conditions and the way farm workers are treated are definitely as living, disposable workers. But even there, workers are getting some success. Here in Oregon, we recently passed the farm worker overtime. Granted, it won't be phased in for a full 5 years, but it's a step, and we join Oregon and California in having some recognition of overtime for farm workers. And the Oregon OSHA is right now reviewing the final rules for working in heat and smoke, which, as we know, has been pretty bad here in Oregon lately. And I haven't heard they are finalized, but I think they're on their way, and they are the strongest in the country, so that's good. So there's other things going on with the farm worker, and I encourage you. I have a flyer downstairs also of how you can sign up for our e-news so you can keep aware of worker actions. And one really exciting opportunity is because I think when workers actually own the means of production, that would be the ideal thing. And we actually have a capital campaign going on here in Oregon right now through PACOON's spinoff organizations. That's our farm worker labor union here in Oregon. And they're raising money right now to purchase the 60 acres. So indigenous Mexican immigrants can farm the land and have a cultural center there. So I think it's very exciting. So what does this all mean to us as people of faith? Because I know that we care deeply about the plight of workers, and we do celebrate the inherent worth and dignity of all, right? That's our first principle. Well, if you're like me, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by all the problems that are going on in the world, and it's a lot. So I want to give you all permission, as I do for myself, to focus your desire to do something, because I know that many of you really do want to do something. But focus it on the areas where you feel most passionate. For me, that's worker rights and the broader economic justice. And I find that what I like about working locally with the Portland Jobs with Justice, with workers like the Providence nurses, the Burgerville workers who I sat through their bargaining sessions and, as Timothy said, did go on for years. And I heard what they asked, and I heard what management said back, and I saw the struggle, and it went on for a long time. But when I have stood shoulder to shoulder with the workers, whether they be the farm workers or any of these workers I've just talked about, I feel more energized, I feel more committed, and that's what makes all the difference. The people part of the work is what's so incredible. So I encourage you to sign up for the Portland Jobs with Justice e-news, look at the flyers downstairs, sign up for our Farm Worker Ministry e-news. I have a nonprofit called Friends Stay Warm, which this church has been generous with over the years. And we provide direct emergency cash assistance to low-wage workers. Most of them are immigrants. And there's many opportunities to get involved. But I'll be posting also actions that happen here in Portland, where you can come out and support the workers, like the May 11th action with the Providence nurses. All of that I'll be posting to the social action news here, and also I think through the e-blast and maybe the bulletin. So you'll hear about it. But one last thing. Don't forget about yourself, because those of us who care a lot and we try to do a lot, we have to take care of ourselves, right? So your spiritual practice, or if you don't consider that you have one, just, you know, whatever it is that brings you joy, brings you peace, do that too. Don't forget. It's vitally important at this time when everything feels so heavy. Because it is heavy. But it's also hopeful. 136 years ago, we celebrated the first May Day, and that was around getting an 8-hour workday. And now, workers are finding incredible new energy for organizing and public sentiment is increasingly supportive and needed. So I stand with workers as an important part of my ministry, and it's the most satisfying part because I'm connected to the people. As a minister, I offer prayers at rallies, and as I said, sometimes with meetings with the workers' management. At our Jobs with Justice Faith Labor Committee meetings, we hear the workers' stories and hear their requests for our support. We come to know the workers as people and share in the struggle. This work is deeply personal and deeply connecting. That is why I do it. Standing with workers is my way of making my values real in the world. Our values are UU values. It's my way of doing justice. I know it matters, and I hope you will join us. Your presence is needed. Amen and bless.
If you would please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us. We are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn the generosity of others.
Our benediction today is again from Martin Luther King Jr. speaking to the United Automobile Workers. Social progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals. In order to realize the American dream of economic justice and of the brotherhood of man, men and women all over the nation must continue to work for it.
I extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with us until we meet again.